Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. The sponsor of this program, the lead sponsor of this program, is Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience, and I will remind you of that at the top of every hour. All right, so we move into hour number three. Actually, there was a part of that discussion. Ariel Helwani showed up in a great way like he always does. There was a part of that discussion at the very end when we were talking about Conor McGregor. And the reason he brought this up, he and Daniel Cormier had a really interesting discussion the other day about brand size and which brand is more powerful. And then Ariel reset that at the very end of our conversation and said there is a question to be posed. Who's got the better brand or the bigger brand? Is it Conor McGregor or is it the UFC itself? And he mentioned as an example that if Conor were to be walking down the street, say in Brussels, and you were to stop somebody, or not if he were to walk down the street, but if you were to stop some random person in the street and say, Conor McGregor, you know, reaction, what is your association? What's the brand association? Somebody might know Conor McGregor, but not know the UFC. And Ariel made that point, and then on the way out the door, when I was thanking him, he asked me, what do you think, Jim? And honestly, I did not hear the question. As we went to break, the XR4TI said, did you hear Ariel pose that question to you? And I said, no, I did not. I was talking. Just one of those audio things. We've got weird audio deals going on right now where if I'm talking over a guest, I might not hear what the guest says. So I think that's really interesting because we've actually in other situations kind of debated that. Who needs whom more? Does Conor need the UFC more than the UFC needs Conor, or is it the other way around? I mean, remember when Conor was truly Conor, and Conor was the double champ, and Conor was on top of the world, before Conor started to misstep outside the cage, nobody honked him harder than me, especially in the mainstream media. I simply could not get enough of this guy. Couldn't get enough of the guy, couldn't get enough of his story, could not get enough of his rap. I mean, I was mesmerized by everything about this guy. And especially from that moment when Jose Aldo came running across the cage and Conor knocked him the hell out in 8 seconds when Jose had not lost in a decade. At that point, if you had said to me, who has the bigger brand? You know, when he was at the peak of his powers, when Conor McGregor was at the peak of his powers, I think we would have had a legitimate debate. I'm going to say right now, Conor's still a big, big deal, a really big deal in that sport, but he's not bigger than the promotion. He's not bigger than the company. He's not bigger than the UFC. If Conor were to never fight ever again in the UFC, they'd be just fine. Trust me. Right now, I think that he does need them. Maybe he needs them more than they need him, but he may not need them per se. It depends how quickly he's running through his money. But no, I would say that the UFC absolutely is still bigger as a brand than Conor. I don't know that if you were to buy Conor, he would sell for $4 billion. Problem with Conor is, and then Conor got in with Habib, and he wrestled and grappled, and then got his ass kicked. But that'll happen when you wrestle and grapple with a guy who's never lost and who's been wrestling and grappling since he took on bears at the age of 3. Conor's fierce, but he's not a bear. You tell me if you want to weigh in on that. Who's the bigger brand or who needs whom more? The UFC? Or even I'll put it this way. Who needs whom more? Does Dana need Conor more than Conor needs Dana? I love Conor. I want to see Conor fight Habib again. I want to see Conor fight Poirier. I basically want to see Conor. I want to see Conor do what Conor did when Conor was at the peak of his powers. I don't need to see Conor fight Manny Pacquiao. I don't need to see Conor fight exhibitions. I don't need to see Conor take a shortcut to the biggest paycheck imaginable. I want to see him at the peak of his powers. I want to see him as an MMA-er. But the UFC, to me, is obviously the bigger brand still yet. 1-800-636-8686. Daniel tweets, Romy, I haven't seen or heard from Chael in a while either. Signed, Success. That old line always makes me laugh. Always makes me laugh. I remember shortly after I brought Kyle Brandt in, Kyle and I went to Hollywood Park. Maybe Santa Anita? Hollywood Park. We went to see a race, and this one rando yelled out literally way across the track to me, "Rome! Rome! What do you know? What do you know about horse racing?" And I shouted back, "Nothing, bro. Nothing." And Kyle goes, "Hey, man, what do you know about success?" Guy looked like a meth head. So that old line makes me laugh all the time. D-Raw in the 925. McNugget could go away today and the UFC would be just fine. I tend to agree. He makes it better. He absolutely makes it better. But if he were to disappear, it would be just fine. If, quote, McNugget went away, I would miss him. But the UFC would be just fine. Who else? 1-800-636-8686. All right, so let's talk Antonio Brown for a minute. It's one of those topics where I've done my very best to stay away from it. I don't want to talk about it, but I'm not doing my job unless I do. As part of a report yesterday, Adam Schefter mentioned that Antonio Brown's suspension is going to end after week 8. And the first thing I thought of when I saw that was, wait, what? He's suspended? That's why we're not hearing about this guy. I thought that he was not playing and we were not hearing about him because teams just got sick of his crap finally. Oh, so it's a suspension. All right. So then my next reaction is, what was the suspension for? Was it for the allegations of sexual misconduct by an artist who had been working at his house? Or was it for that burglary and the incident with the moving truck company? Or was it for the allegations that he sexually assaulted his trainer? Or was it for any of the numerous other incidents that he's been involved in? And I'm not making light of this at all. I'm asking because I really don't know. I'm asking because the list of serious allegations is really long. I don't know what allegations he's been punished for and which ones are still pending or still being investigated. So I really don't know. And then my third reaction to the news that Antonio Brown's suspension is going to end after week 8 was crap. Great. Now we have to go through this all over again. I mean, this guy, Antonio Brown, is a zombie. Like, he literally will not go away. Seriously. It's been more than a year since the Patriots disgraced themselves by bringing him in, making him the focal point of their offense. Never forget Tom Brady invited him to live in his home with him. Made him the focal point of the offense for a game against the Dolphins, gave him the game ball, and then dumped him right around 5 p.m. when things got just too hot. And then in the years since then, his behavior has not gotten much better. So I figured we were finally done with him and all the stories about him. But just when you think the stories about him are finished, and there aren't going to be any more reports about him, there aren't going to be any more teams interested in him, then they get back up. They reanimate and they start spreading. In other words, this guy's like a real-life horror movie. You survive this horrible ordeal involving a chainsaw or a drill or something worse. You get through it. Everything is quiet. You think it's over. You're leaning back against a wall. You're trying to catch your breath. And then all of a sudden, Shefty gets the iPhone out and he busts through the wall to report that the Seahawks are interested in signing AB. And then you're right back in that same nightmare all over again. There he is, Mr. Big Chest, right back in play. And by the way, it's annoying and it's tedious to you and I, but can you imagine what it must be like for any of the people that he hurt along the way? Man, they've got to live through this whole thing all over again too. But then you see that report about Seattle and Brown, and you think, Seattle? Why would Seattle be interested in Antonio Brown? Why the Seahawks? They're in first place. They've never been more explosive offensively. They have DK Metcalf. They have Tyler Lockett. Both of them are on pace to break 1,000 yards this season. David Moore is good enough. Philip Dorsett's coming back from injury. Who knows? Maybe one day he lives up to the hype. And they've already got Josh Gordon waiting for reinstatement. Their issues are on defense, not offense. So, like, there's no way they'd be interested in this guy, right? Wrong. Not according to Peter. Here is what Peter told SiriusXM.
Competitively, John's in on everything. He knows everybody in the league. He knows what's going on. He's kept us involved and has made marvelous moves over the years. And we'll see how this one, you know, we're there. We're in it. We know what's happening, and it isn't unsettled yet, and we don't know where it's going to go. But we're always on the ready to compete to get guys, and so this is one of those chances. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Damn, Peter. He's talking about John Schneider, of course. I mean, Peter, you shouldn't have. I mean, genuinely, you shouldn't have. You're finally starting to make some sense, Pete. All that great stuff about you turning over a new leaf, finally letting Russ cook. Such a good story. The fact that you were open to completely changing the offensive identity of your team after all the success you had at that age. You're not a young guy. Like, that was actually pretty inspiring to me. But now you're going to kick the tires on Antonio Brown. And that's actually going to happen. That actually is happening. That's actually really disappointing. Like, I thought you were better than this, but I was wrong. Peter was then asked how much digging that they would have to do to get into Brown's past before they make a decision like this.
You know, we're nowhere there right now, so let's wait and see what happens and all that. But we do all of the homework we can think of doing. I mean, we will never think that we can leave a stone unturned. And so that's how we approach everything. And so that's where we'll continue to do that here.
All right, so Petey, I'm here to help. I'm always here to help. Let me jump in and help you out here. If a guy has been dumped by three teams in a year and a half, and suspended by the league, that homework assignment that you say you're doing, it's already been done for you. It's completed. All you have to do is hand it in and keep moving. If a guy managed to get frostbite in the middle of summer, if a guy threatened to fight his own general manager, you pretty much know all you need to know.
Yeah, my feet is pretty much getting circumcised, right?
If a guy says that his feet are getting circumcised, don't you know all you need to know? And that's before we get to any of the allegations of sexual misconduct with an artist, an allegation of sexual assault by a trainer, an allegation that he left a threatening text to a woman, the house arrest, the fact that he's on probation for the next 2 years after assaulting a delivery driver in Florida. All of those things. And again, why would the Seahawks, with 5 wins, want Antonio Brown? In fact, let me rephrase that question. Why would anybody want Antonio Brown? Well, here's the best part. According to Shefty, the Seahawks are not the only team that are interested. Awesome. I mean, great. Really good stuff, everybody. I'm proud of all of you. I understand that NFL teams talk a really good game. NFL teams talk a great game, don't they? About character and then culture. But they don't really live that, do they? As Cards GM Steve Keim famously said back in the day, and it's an awesome quote, if Hannibal Lecter ran a 4.3, we'd probably diagnose it as an eating disorder. Listen, I know that Antonio Brown put up enormous numbers in Pittsburgh. I understand that that's enticing to teams and that they're probably going to think, you know what, we can handle this guy, or this guy's learned his lesson, or both. And if we get him in our facility, expose him to our culture, we will succeed where the Steelers and the Raiders and the Patriots failed. We're different. Hey, do you remember when Antonio Brown was an electric player with the Steelers and had an electric personality on top of that? Do you remember that? I don't. Not anymore. Not anymore. To me, that's now ancient history. And it sure seems like none of that personality that we thought was so electric was real in the first place. At his best, he's a great player and a terrible teammate and an even worse guy. You sign this guy, you get what you deserve. I always say it. We don't know any of these guys, especially this guy. You know, and back to Keim's quote. Like, if Jeffrey Dahmer could put up 50 reps on the bench at the combine, he'd be at least a day two selection, right? If that high security prison let the Menendez boys out,
and let them hold private workouts, and both these guys had 45-inch verts, GMs would be like, their parents misunderstood them. Clearly, that was self-defense. Like, if this is what it is, if an Antonio Brown signing is inevitable, are we supposed to just relax and enjoy it? Like, for the rest of you who are sick of this and want to avoid the zombie nightmare altogether, I've got one solution. Bleeping houseboats.
When the zombie apocalypse goes down, what is your survival strategy?
F***ing houseboats. Houseboats, man. It depends on the kind of zombies you're dealing with. You know, you could have slow, all-the-time daytime zombies, or you could have sprinting, fast nighttime zombies, like 28 days later. So I don't really know. It would kind of depend. I would lean more towards houseboat if it was, like, sprinting, like, nighttime zombies, because then you could just go out at night and then come back and chill in the daytime, and then you could just live on a boat, and it'd be cool.
Honestly, that's one of my favorite athlete interviews ever. Or, in the very least, one of my favorite singular moments in talking to an athlete ever. That was Ronda Rousey on our Showtime show when the zombie apocalypse was the biggest thing in the world. That's all anybody was talking about. Zombies. Zombies. And I said to her, what would your strategy be? And without blinking, she said, effing houseboats. Effing houseboats. She went full F-bomb right there on the set of the Showtime show. One more time, Rit, run that back. That was such a great moment.
When the zombie apocalypse goes down, what is your survival strategy?
F***ing houseboats. Houseboats, man. It depends on the kind of zombies you're dealing with. You know, you could have slow, all-the-time daytime zombies.
Bleeping
or you could have sprinting, fast
man.
Nighttime zombies, like 28 days later. So I don't really know. It would kind of depend. I would lean more towards houseboat if it was, like, sprinting.
Can I tell you something about Rhonda? Thanks, Rick. Can I tell you something about Rhonda? Rhonda, and remember, Dana White said that he would never, ever let women fight in the company. Rhonda was the biggest star in the company, bigger than any guy. Rhonda was the biggest thing in MMA for a while, like as big as Conor. She was that big. And then she moved on, and the company is doing pretty well. Rhonda was something else. Rhonda, the first time I met her, I think, was season one of the Showtime show. And when I met her, I'm like, wow, she has got so much freaking it. She's amazing. And she was the biggest thing in the world. And then Holly Holm's foot smashed into her face. And then Holly's fists smashed into her face. And then Amanda's fist smashed into Holly's face. I love MMA. And Ronda's. But you don't want any part of Amanda. Amanda is a classy, classy person and a dangerous fighter. All right, when we come back, and it does seem almost inevitable, doesn't it, that somebody's going to bring an AB and sign him when that suspension's up. Would you? A-12s, do you want him? This one's for you, Rit. Finally. Remember that time Rit came in, I let him host a segment on his birthday, and he went on for like 9 minutes about nothing?
Bring it on.
Well, actually, not really nothing. He went on about how he became a ticket broker or a scalper. And he also killed Tom Hanks. Literally. He put him in the ground.
Tom Hanks went belly up as well, so.
No, he didn't, Rit. Grainger helps your business move forward with supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Call or click Grainger.com or stop on by. Like, as an example, James Kelly will be part of the program tomorrow, I think. We'll get the big head bets.
Negative, Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
Rit, we will not be running back your segment again. Actually, I'll make you a deal. If you live an entire year going forward, I will let you do that again on October 14th. But you have to live another year. I like my chances of you not living another year. Just playing with you, old man. Not really. So, like, Jordan Spieth is a professional. He's got a really good resume. Now, I understand that he's had a really bad run for a really long time. I think we all understand that. But even if you look at the last 3 years and his struggles, at age 27, he is still a three-time major winner. He still has 11 tour victories. He still has a FedEx Cup. He's still a former player of the year. And he did lead the money list back in 2015. So this guy's had a really nice career. But the one thing he had never done was ace a par four. Not on tour, not in college, not during a practice round, not on vacation. Never. And then that all changed. According to Golf Digest, at some point during the COVID hiatus, Spieth and his wife Annie were laying low in Colorado. They were just outside of Aspen when they decided to make a low-key tee time at a local country club. Somebody at the club could not keep the celebrity tee time to themselves, so word began to spread that the former world number one was about to play 18 at their local track. To the knob who leaked that info, way to keep a secret, guy. Way to blow up the spot and Spieth in the process. I mean, if you want that guy playing at your track, probably you shouldn't be running your mouth about that. So, he goes on to play his ultra-casual round. He gets to the drivable par 4 12th. Some local named Shane Smith heard that Spieth was coming through and decided to watch the tour pro and his three-time major champion from his backyard because this guy lives right next to the green. I mean, you can't blame the guy, right? If you had a house on a golf course and you knew Jordan Spieth was about to walk by your house with some bats in his hand, I mean, wouldn't you post up? Wouldn't you watch him roll through? So Spieth pulls driver, takes a shot at the elevated dance floor. According to Golf Digest, the 12th green at Snowmass Country Club is elevated, so it's a blind shot for the players, but not a blind landing spot for Shane Smith. You see where I'm going with this. Spieth hits his drive. He drives up to the green to look for his ball, but he cannot find it. So he asks Smith if he had seen the ball. Smith replies to Spieth, quote, "Oh, that was you? It's in the hole," end quote. Hot damn! What a shot. What a moment. Best vacation ever. Spieth then says to Smith, quote, "You kidding?" Smith replies, "No, man. It bounced twice. It went in. Nice shot," end of quote. At that point, according to Smith, Spieth starts to lose his mind. He's jumping around. He's yelling about how he's never made an ace on a par four before. Next thing you know, the wife joins in. They start celebrating it together. It's an amazing moment. Like, who knows? You know, maybe his entire fate turns on this, right? Maybe he gets right. So they're having a moment of a lifetime. And it's at that point that Smith decides to reveal to Jordan Spieth that Shane Smith is the biggest tool and jackwagon and D-bag in the world, because Smith told Spieth, quote, "Hey, man, I was just trying to be funny, but your ball finished 20 feet from the cup. I marked it, and then I put it in the hole." Hey, Shane, you suck, man. I mean, really. That is one of the lamest and baggiest pranks ever. Let me guess, you're the guy who thinks it's funny to pre-record lottery drawings and fake out your friends with winning tickets. Because to you, watching somebody get really excited over a once-in-a-lifetime thing only to have them crash back down to earth and have you laugh in their face is your idea of a great time. Smith also told Golf Digest that he does it to regular players too, as if to cop to, "Hey man, that makes it better. Like, I'm not just singling out the pro over there. I do this to everybody. This is who I am. This is what I do. This is how I roll. This is where I live. I do this to people all the time, and it's always funny." And my question is, how does this guy still have that house right there on that golf course? How has nobody burned it down yet? How do the locals put up with a guy like that? I mean, touching somebody else's rock in golf is already a cardinal sin. But moving it into the hole and faking them into thinking they made an ace on a par four is a reason to go. In fact, it's more than a reason to go. It's damn near a war crime. And then being a repeat offender and taking advantage of your backyard's proximity to that hole makes you maybe the biggest D-bag in Colorado. Smith told Golf Digest that Spieth was really nice about it. Yeah, because of course he was. He's Jordan Spieth, one of the best dudes ever. And he's a guest at that club, and he's smart, and he knows that everybody was watching him to see his reaction. He's not going to let his hands go to some local D-bag like that, but would anybody have faulted him if he did? Smith said, quote, "He couldn't have been nicer about the whole thing. Just an awesome story that I will never forget." End quote. An awesome story that you'll never forget, man. Homeboy is so proud of himself. Telling Golf Digest, "Man, I do this to everybody, and it's always awesome, and it's always funny." But never funnier than it was right there. My man, you're lucky. You really are lucky. You're lucky that was Spieth. Why don't you try that with Pat Reed? See how that goes. Or maybe Bryson. Bryson's probably up to 275 right now. Why don't you try that out there? See how that goes. Then again, I can't imagine any tour pros swinging by Snowmass anytime soon. First off, the starter leaks the tee times. Then you got this Jamie Kennedy wannabe, or Ashton Kutcher, on the 12th green. Dude, stand down, bro. Nobody thinks that's funny. One day, you'll do it to the wrong dude who's not going to get your joke, and it's going to go really badly. Imagine this guy scurrying out to the green to drop the ball in the hole. Hey, Jordan. Yo, Jordo, my man. You aced that, dude. Great shot. Atta boy. Imagine, you know what he should have done? So Jordan gets back and is buying everybody a drink. Buying everybody at the club a drink. Dude should have walked in at that point and said, "Hey, man, I moved it." Just kidding. Psych. When we come back, just a golf story for you. When we come back, Will Brinson joins us. Senior NFL writer for CBS. Lots to talk to about what's going on this weekend in the league. And you've got the critical NFC matchup tonight. The Eagles, or what's left of them, going up against the Giants. Who you got? I think I'm leaning towards Giants plus 4.5. I think. That's how busted up Philadelphia is. I'd like it better if it was 10.5. Time now for a sports update. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It used to be, and I know he's listening, or he better be listening. It used to be that I would dread Thursdays because Alvin would not be here, and I'd have to look at the old man running the board. Now I'm kind of like, "Hey, man, don't go, Pops," because he's so funny, and not deliberately. He just hit me with, "Hey, huge call, Billboard." Probably after the interview. What, not before? Huge call. Time for the huge call right now. No, it's not, Pops. It's time to talk to Will Brinson right now. When else would I do it? Finally. We are joined. You know what, Alvin? Take another day off. It's fun having the old guy around here. And frankly, we don't know how long he's going to be here. We are joined right now by a CBS Sports senior writer. He is the host of the Pick Six Podcast. You can check out the Pick Six Podcast YouTube channel. We consider him a very good friend of the program, too. He is Will Brinson. Will, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, Jim? You know, I recorded a podcast with Brady Quinn the other day, and I thought of you because one of our sound drops for the show was you talking about that beef, the alleged beef between Brady and Derek Anderson way back in the day on Rome is Burning, and doing the "now I'm done" impersonation.
That's pretty funny. So what was Brady's response to that?
He's like, "Hey, you can't play that. If you play that, you got to pay me royalties."
Yeah, how'd that go for him? I wouldn't be rushing to the mailbox for that.
I thought he could have everything in my possession.
Yeah, that's it. Tell Brady I said what's up. I've not spoken to him in a long, long time. I think he's doing a really nice job. Tell him I said what's up.
Will do.
All right, so reports come out this morning that the Vikings were trading Yannick Ngakoue to Baltimore for a third-round pick and a 2022 conditional fifth-round pick. First off, Will, what do you make of that move for Baltimore?
I love it for Baltimore. You know, they've been trying to get Yannick for a while, and they didn't want to pay the price tag that Jacksonville wanted. And Jacksonville allegedly wanted a first-round pick. No one was giving them that for the franchise tag guy this late in the process. Minnesota eventually surrendered a second, which I think is important too. But I think Baltimore got a good price here for a player that can help them now, who can come in and be a pass rusher, can beef up their defense. This is a team that, you know, and if you think about it like this, they had to, against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, they did what Don Martindale wants to do, which is blitz the living heck out of quarterbacks. The problem is, if you do that against Patrick Mahomes, his numbers against five or more defenders coming his way when he's dropping back are astronomically good. And if you blitz Mahomes, he's going to light you up because he has so many weapons. So what do the Ravens do? Sort of as a counter to that, they go out and trade for a guy in Yannick Ngakoue who can beef up their natural pass rush. Maybe they decided they want to play a little more soft zone coverage, drop back, not let Mahomes beat him deep the way he did on that primetime game. And by bringing in Yannick, you give yourself a better chance to rush him without having to blitz. And I really do think, even though they're not in the same division, you know, there's a reality. The Ravens know they have to get past the Chiefs. And I think that some of the moves that they're making are probably designed to do just that.
I love that move. I love that move for Baltimore. I think that's a no-brainer. I do that all day long. All right, so week six kicks off tonight, Will, with the 1-5 Giants taking on the 1-4-1 Eagles. I cannot believe I'm about to say this, but how important is this game between two one-win teams?
This game is massive, Jim, and I can't believe I'm saying that either. I mean, this is... You know, look, the Cowboys might have two wins. They might be in first place in that division, but that thing is it's the Titanic after it hit the iceberg right now. And it hadn't even gotten, you know, like, this is the early stages of Mike McCarthy's tenure there. They don't, you know, so to me, if you're the Giants or you're the Washington football team or certainly the Eagles, who I think are a great bet right now at plus money to win that division, if you can find it before they kick off tonight, one of those teams has to be thinking, I mean, we can get a playoff shot. You know, we don't have a whole lot cooking right now. I mean, the Eagles are just devastated with injuries, and they still have to be feeling pretty good about where they are with one win and one tie. It's incredible. So you got to take care of business tonight against a Giants team that has no offensive line, has a quarterback who Giants fans are like now starting to call Jameis Jones or Danny Winston. And you knock the heck out of him. You steal the football. You score some points, you get out of Dodge with a DeSean Jackson bomb or two, you hope Lane Johnson is healthy, and you try and grind out some W's until, you know, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert are able to get back, you get healthy and win the division. This is a massive must-win game for the Eagles.
It will. Do you like Philly -4.5?
I do, but, I mean, I wouldn't like want to put my firstborn child on it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But, I mean, I would take him for sure.
Will Brinson is joining us. All right, so you mentioned Mike McCarthy. Let me ask you about him. Jerry Jones was all in on Mike McCarthy. My question to you, why? How do you explain that, and exactly what did he think he was getting in McCarthy?
I think he thought he was getting a former Super Bowl-winning coach who had done well, really well in Green Bay for a really long time and could bring that sustainable success, the 13-win consistent success to Dallas. But, you know, you got to remember, Aaron Rodgers was there. And having Aaron Rodgers in his prime really helps. And you can even make the case that Mike McCarthy underachieved by only winning one Super Bowl. And I know that's tough, but only getting to one Super Bowl. I mean, that's a tough sell because you got the ring. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is historically great talent, and you feel like you probably should have achieved more. Now you're in Dallas, and what happened is, I mean, this roster for the Cowboys has always been this way. It's always been stars and scrubs, and Dallas has done a pretty good job of identifying talent over the last decade in the draft, but the primary spot where they landed that talent on the offensive line, all of a sudden these guys are either retiring, they're getting older, they're getting injured, and now their strength, that offensive line, isn't there. You can put Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, like T.O. out on the field with Andy Dalton, and if he doesn't have an offensive line, it ain't going to matter because that guy under pressure isn't going to work out. You lose Dak Prescott, of course, and these injuries, this Cowboys roster isn't built to sustain a bunch of injuries. And Mike McCarthy, you know, I don't want to call him a front runner coach or anything like that, but you know, when it doesn't seem like he has coached exceptionally well when the going gets tough. I mean, he's done a great job coaching when he's got a loaded roster with all-pro wide receivers that Ted Thompson found in the second round and a Hall of Fame quarterback and a great offensive line. I don't know how great his teams have been when a ton of adversity hits that roster.
We were talking to Will Brinson. It's amazing to see that they're already turning on them. That tweet from Jane Slater yesterday was something.
It was
unbelievable. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. Quote, totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. They just aren't good at their jobs. Those are anonymous players suggesting that. So that, to me, is one of my favorite tweets ever. Will, I got to get your thoughts before you go. What about the Buffalo Bills? When they were 4-0, we were talking about them being a team that could not only win the AFC East and finally rip that from the Pats, but they were legitimate Super Bowl threats. We were talking about Josh Allen maybe being an MVP candidate or being on that short list. Then they lose a couple of games. My question for you, were these games just a couple of losses from weird circumstances and injuries, or were they exposed, and is this who they really are?
Well, I think two things with the Bills, Jim. One, that defense just isn't playing well right now. They were top five defense the last 2 years. You expected it to continue. It just hasn't. They've been injured. Matt Milano has been a big absence for them at linebacker. Tre'Davious White's been banged up, and they just haven't gotten a ton of pressure up front. And you've seen that with sort of their roster moves. If that defense is bad, well, I mean, you got to have a counter in order to end up being a playoff team and to be a top tier AFC team. And that counter is Josh Allen takes a step forward. Through the first 4 weeks of the season, we thought he had, and I still do think he has taken a step forward. But I think maybe it was misleading how big a step it was. And instead of this gigantic leap into MVP territory, maybe he just sort of figured some things out, improved his accuracy, improved his downfield touch, got Stephon Diggs there, got better at going through his progressions. But one of the problems is we've seen the last couple of weeks, these teams, the Chiefs and the Titans specifically, said, all right, look, we're not going to rush you or play man-to-man against you because then you can take off running. We're going to drop back into like a soft zone, and we're going to make you really make some tough decisions and be patient and beat us underneath. And that's not the type of player that Josh Allen is right now. He wants the home run. He wants the deep ball. And he wants to fire lasers into tight windows. But when you've got those soft zones, you really have to be careful about picking your spots. And I think a lot of teams are doing this to younger mobile quarterbacks right now because it allows them to minimize the rushing yardage they can get with their feet while also forcing them to make tough decisions from the pocket.
Talking to Will Brinson. All right, Will, one last thought. We knew that at some point Tua was going to get an opportunity. I'm not sure that we knew it was going to happen this soon. Ryan Fitzpatrick clearly did not know that it was going to happen this soon. It's kind of sad to see him react the way he did, understandably, but he didn't take that too well. I'm sure he'll bounce back quickly and be a great teammate. For you, though, what's a reasonable expectation for Tua for the rest of this season?
Yeah, it's tough, Jim, because they have, they just played the Jets and Jaguars and had easy games on the schedule. Like, why didn't you let Tua play then? And now they've got the Cardinals, Chargers, Broncos, amongst some other teams coming up. It's a tougher slate. I think that you can't get too caught up in it if you're a Dolphins fan and expect for Tua to take you to the playoffs. I think it is possible that his ceiling is winning that division because the Dolphins are 3-3. He's a special player. We've seen him succeed at Alabama before. Seems like he's healthy. I would assume so if they're going to throw him in there. But I think kind of coming in and going 500 the rest of the way would be an impressive effort, I think, because you don't have a very good offensive line. You have some nice skill position guys in Devontae Parker, Preston Williams, Mike Gesicki, Isaiah Ford, a fun toy, Jeremiah Grant. I mean, they got some interesting pieces there. But to think that Tua is going to come in and just win Rookie of the Year or be an All-Pro, I mean, that's possible. But I think tempering expectations and just seeing him be comfortable, playing well, keeping the Dolphins in the hunt, maybe at 500, a little above 500, I think that's perfectly reasonable for Dolphins fans.
Very aggressive move by Brian Flores. I like it, actually. I understand why Fitz would be unhappy, but a really aggressive move. He is a CBS Sports senior writer. He is host of the Pick Six podcast. Check out the Pick Six podcast YouTube channel, and he is a friend of the program. He is Will Brinson. Will, great to have you back. Thanks so much. Good job.
All right, good times, Jim. Talk to you later, man.
You too. Be good, Will. Hey, by the way, I mentioned his YouTube channel. We are getting a YouTube channel. This show. We are getting, yes, we are, Rit. Don't look at me like that. We are getting a YouTube channel, and no, you don't get your own videos on it. Huge call brought to you by Capital One Venture Card. With the Capital One Venture Card, you can earn 100,000 bonus miles that you can actually use. redeemable for vacation rentals, car rentals, and more when you spend $20,000 in your first year. What is in your wallet? Limited time offer. Terms do apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, doing pretty good, Jim. I appreciate you having me on. You pronounced Tampa wrong. That's Bill from Champa Bay.
Bill from Champa Bay. That's your huge call. Is that what you're getting at, Ritt? Is that what you were doing with that? Now we're done. My thanks to Carlos Pena. My man was on fire. Carlos Pena started that conversation by saying, man, I am pumped to be here. And then he proved it. Ariel Helwani, Will Brinson. My thanks to the XR4TI. See you tomorrow. We're out.